made any hay doing that.
It's showtime, folks. That's
because I did the Rick impression.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. I didn't do a Jodie Whittaker impression for Doctor Who, though, to be fair.
Okay. Just for those dedicated listeners, what would your Jodie Whittaker impression have been?
All right, fam.
Oh, that was actually... Yeah, that's... Okay, that works. Cool.
Call me fam.
Okay. So, now this is the first of the Better Call Saul whispering into the void.
Yes.
This is season 5, episode 3.
Yes.
Which is called something.
The guy for this.
Oh yeah, you're the guy for this.
You're the guy for this. And it was directed by Michael Morris. It was also written by Anne Cherkis. I hope I haven't butchered that name. And it is starring Bob Odenkirk, Jonathan Banks, Ray Sehorn, Giancarlo Esposito, Tony Dalton, Michael Mando. Am I forgetting anyone? I don't think I've forgotten anyone. And that's it. Boom.
Good stuff. Do you have an opening statement, Daniel?
I do, yes. The sequence at the beginning tells it all. Saul is the ice cream, and the ants are the criminals he deals with. It's about to get big.
I was very impressed with how well-trained those ants were.
Yeah, I thought that it was VX effects, but it actually isn't. It's actually they got an ant wrangler.
Really?
And it's completely, yeah, it's 100% real. It's like, oh my, that is amazing.
That is pretty cool, yeah.
The music as well. Wow. Anyway, what is
yes,
your
my opening statement. A good way to gently ease us into Saul versus the DEA. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a sort of a good dramatic tool of conflict. It's, if in doubt, Saul versus the DEA forever. Because that's the only, because most of his clients are like, drug affiliated, so that's what it is in a way, and I like that it's going to be Saul versus the DEA from now on.
Yeah, I think we're finally branching into that criminal territory. So what is your read on the opening teaser?
The opening teaser.
Yep, the ants and the ice cream.
Oh, the ants! I couldn't agree with you more. This is it, the ice cream is Saul. The ants are the criminals and the crime. It's the temptation almost. It's you know that tale about the frog and the scorpion?
Yes.
I couldn't not kill you. It's in my nature, even though we're both going to die, sort of thing. Saul is inexorably drawn towards this life of money and crime, and he's drawn to the glamour of it in a way. And it's almost inevitable. It's like how the ants couldn't not eat the ice cream if they tried.
Yeah. It's just the nature, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a very Breaking Bad-esque teaser, wasn't it? Like Breaking Bad have always done like sort of weird ambiguous teasers with insects and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I will remember that teaser for the rest of my life. It's like so...
It was very good, yeah.
Just, and then the ant is like, at the end, it's like really unsettling. It's like, and then just... It's like, oh, it starts off as this small, cute little creature just coming to get some... Oh, well, that's fairly innocuous. And then, like, before you've even had a chance to blink, it's just thousands of them just roaming over this lovely thing. And it's like, they're everywhere, and then it's... And it's just really aggressive. And then it sort of pulls away from the ants, and life sort of goes on. And as big as it seems, because it's so close on the ants, and as important as that sort of life is for these people, it pulls away, and it's like, no, that life is it will only lead to squalor, and sort of degradation, and being on the side of the street, just sort of clinging for anything that you can find.
Yeah.
I just visually, it just looked brilliant. It's like the ants. The ants have all the power when the camera's focused on them, and then like you pull away and you remember that, yeah, they're just ants. It's like
it's not a microcosm of reality. Yeah,
it's not a rewarding life that these creatures live. It's like, it's really, really excellent visual storytelling.
What did you think about when that girl in Nacho's flat was like trying to take apart the remote control And Nacho sort of reached over and got a jigsaw puzzle out of a cupboard and tipped that on the table for her.
I think it's the same thing. Do you remember on Breaking Bad when Jesse had to get those druggies out of the den, and Jesse went into the garden and started digging?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't know for sure, but I believe that people who intake or are addicted to methamphetamine can become fixated on very, very strange things, and their energy is so high. I need to figure it out, because I'm going to botch what it actually is. It's like, why did you think while I'm searching it?
I think it was like, I don't know, it sort of was an interesting, sort of almost nurturing, caring side to Nacho's personality. And it was weird, but I kind of quite liked it in a funny way.
Yeah.
It was, he knows that, in a way, I'm presuming he sold the drugs to this girl, or gave them to her, or something. And in a weird way, it's like, he feels some degree of, he should care for her, because it's as a result of his illegal activity that she's in this state, in a way.
Yeah. Ah, right, okay, so the scene was playing on the many negative behaviours of a meth addict. Many users of meth experience increased paranoia, energy, a greater sense of alertness, and very unpredictable behaviour. Jesse, knowing a lot about meth, plays on this by creating a scene with the shovel and pretending he's looking for something. The paranoid, curious Tucker can't understand why and is stoned enough to believe there is something really there. Jesse's determination to find whatever is there leads to the paranoid and alert Tucker into taking over and becoming determined to find whatever is there himself.
Mm.
So maybe she's like, but she said, I have to take it apart to clean it.
Mm. Maybe she's just obsessing over the idea of the things in this world are unclean, things are incomplete, something like that. She's just picked this thing up from somewhere and now it's just in her head circling, sort of thing.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right about Nacho sort of being caring, because he's like, when he's with like Lalo, he comes across as just this grimacing, you know, criminal. But he, his father is the heart of his arc. It's like he's doing everything he can to get his dad and himself out of this business.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Which is makes him a very complex character.
I think one thing I did like in this episode is we're sort of starting to see the beginnings of the Saul patter, of like when he's nervous or when he's in a situation and he immediately, it's almost a reflex.
Yeah.
It's this sort of, it resorts to this patter. And like when he was in the garage with Nacho and Lalo, and he just immediately resorted to this patter of, well, I think I actually did you quite well there. You were only in jail for part of one day, and I got you off, and you haven't got to go back. And he was immediately this sort of self-preservation. It's like a reflex.
Oh yeah.
You can tell he's not like engaged his brain to do it. It's like his mouth is just working on its own. That's just straight away what he's saying.
Definitely, definitely, and it's coming. Everything's coming full circle now, because. Mm-hmm. He meets Tuco in the very first episode of the show. And
yeah.
The first four episodes are Nacho getting arrested, and Jimmy has to sort of get him out, otherwise he's dead. And then the two of them part ways, and then it's like Jimmy goes on this experience where he becomes more devoid of sort of care, and he has all this business with Chuck. And Chuck dies, and then he's sort of, yeah, I'm ready to just do whatever it takes to win. And Nacho is subsequently trying to get himself out of this position. He ends up working for Gus because he poisoned Hector. And it's like the both of them have went on this journey, and now it's almost like a retelling of the first episode where everything's coming back together for the sort of big avalanche that's about to happen.
Do you think in this series, or maybe not in this series, in a future series maybe, we're going to see like a... We talk a lot about people playing chess with other people, if that makes sense. The complicated manoeuvring and mental gymnastics that people are doing. Do you think we're going to see Saul versus Hank chess sort of thing?
I don't know.
Or is Hank too stupid for that? Or is the stupidity a facade?
I think that Hank went on a very interesting journey in Breaking Bad, because he's a very good detective. He noticed the smallest things, but his sort of arrogance towards his brother-in-law was what prevented him from seeing Walt right in front of him. But when he was sort of demeaned and he lost his ability to move properly, and he had to sort of gain a lot of humility, and then he sort of came back, not the same person, far more sort of leveled, far more just, you know, kinder and more considerate, because he's just really arrogant at the start of the show, and it's he's a good detective, but he can't see because he doesn't have the sort of lens that Walt has. He couldn't possibly conceive of someone like Walt being so dangerous. And then when he becomes vulnerable, it's he has the ability to understand how someone so vulnerable can be so, you know, formidable in that way. But if I remember correctly, Hank knows Saul, sort of. But only in the sense that they've dealt a few times. I don't think it's going to be this sort of antagonistic type thing. I don't think there's enough sort of backstory there in Breaking Bad for that to happen. I'd imagine that they'll have dealt a few times, because he seems to recognise him in the show, but I don't know if it'll be as big as sort of mentally chess type thing.
Sure.
I think, Hank's antagonist has always been the cartel, so if anyone's going to be an antagonist for Hank, it's going to be Lalo.
Because
he doesn't know anything about Gus at this point, so Gus is
maybe Fring will sort of manipulate Hank into pushing Lalo back south of the border.
Yeah, or maybe Lalo will die
in a shootout with DEA,
because Gus only had one scene this episode.
I love Gus, give him some more.
Yeah. And the problem I had with this episode is that it's really just sort of doubling down on how our characters feel. And it didn't feel like filler, because stuff did happen and it moved the plot along. But it's yes, we understand that Kim is in turmoil over Jimmy's going-ons, and you know. What's interesting, this is the first time, really one of the first times we get some backstory for Kim.
Yeah.
Where she talks about her family and things like that. We haven't really had anything apart from that. You know, a few tidbits here and there, but other than that, not a lot.
I really liked the Kim. Kim goes and tries to get that bloke to move house.
Yeah.
I really liked that. That was really good. I liked how she is being hired essentially to be Saul Goodman.
Yeah.
You can imagine Saul Goodman, Breaking Bad era Saul Goodman, going down and being like, hey buddy, I just need to get you out of your house. And through the patter would go on and on and on and on. And he would manage to convince this person, actually, I have wanted to move for a while.
Yeah.
And they'd be out. And so what Kim's sort of frustration is with the world is the fact that the world is asking for a Saul Goodman, and she desperately doesn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
She desperately wants to remain. That's why she's doing all these pro bono cases.
Oh yeah, you can tell
because
she hates it.
She hates the pro bono cases, but she hates herself more. And she's like, I just don't
want to
be a terrible person, sort of thing.
I think she loves the pro bono cases. I think she just hates working for, having to go and do these things for Mesa Verde. You can tell, she said, I just realised I have all pro bono cases tomorrow, so I'm celebrating. And then that gets interrupted. She needs to sort of make a decision, because it's working for that company, that bank, is really just, it's rivaling our core. It's they're not very moral, and they're happy to sort of put this sort of stubborn old man somewhere else. And Kim desperately she just hates sort of having to do that to people. And it weighs so much on her that she goes back with the purest of intentions and says, I'm going to try and help you. I really, because she feels really bad about it. And the guy just heartbreakingly just says, you'll say anything to get what you want. And I think that that'll play a big part into the reason that she sort of finally leaves Jimmy.
Yeah.
But that's something Jimmy would do, and Kim is now being associated with the way Jimmy is working, and I think she's going to just be like, no, I can't do this anymore.
Mm. And I don't know why I keep getting this this thought pop into my head almost unbidden, but I keep thinking that Kim is going to die a very sudden, very aggressive death.
Yeah.
I don't know why I think that, but I really do think she's going to. I think that there's going to be a point where Lalo kills her, or she... Or even if it's just a twist of fate type thing. She's driving over a patch of ice and it makes her careen off a bridge or something. I think she's going to die very suddenly. I think that might be the trigger or what snaps in Jimmy to make him go full Saul almost.
Jimmy will have to do some more... He'll have to become a bit more baseless and a bit more conscienceless, because even though he's like Saul now, he's like you said, yeah, he's my client and I want to keep him alive.
Mm.
But he's still like, you saw at the end of the episode, the great moment of like, understanding between the two of them.
It's yeah.
Like he still really loves Kim and Kim really loves him, and it's like he has to get to that point where it's like it doesn't matter anymore. The way she feels and the way he feels about her, it's like he doesn't care. That's where he needs to be before Kim leaves.
Sure.
You know.
Hmm. I'm asking this question now, and this might just be something I've missed from not watching the first four seasons, but what was Mike's problem with the postcard in the bar?
Oh, yeah, so in the previous season...
Yeah?
Him and Werner Ziegler were at a bar, and it was like the two of them were talking about their lives and things like that, and Werner said that his father helped build the Sydney Opera House.
Oh, okay.
And it was a postcard. I think it was actually that bar that they were at, and it was the postcard was there, and Werner was talking about it, and it was a really heartwarming sort of moment for them. And obviously, Mike feels incredibly guilty. That's another thing. How is Gus going to get Mike back?
Yeah, I cannot figure that out for the life of me. The only thing I can think is that Gus will give the granddaughter like a university tuition or something. That's the only thing I can think, is that Gus will do something for the granddaughter.
Yeah.
Because that is the only thing in the world that Mike is actually likes, is his granddaughter. He hates himself. He sort of hates his daughter-in-law a bit. He sort of pities her, and it's like he really just hates everything.
Yeah, he's very he's turning off the tap. But not at the moment. He's very emotional at the moment, and he's just sort of spiraling. Something big needs to happen, man.
It does.
It's like you've set this up now. It's like all the characters are in the right place for something to happen, and it's like something big's gonna happen. Very, very soon, I think. And Hank and Gomez are back.
That's a nice. I like thing. Hank. I like Gomez. They're both really cool.
Yeah, they're good. They're a good buddy cop type thing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you've ever looked up Dean Norris's like IMDb page, but he's played Hank about a million times in a million different things. he's been cast as like policeman number four, like a 100,000 times. Like he was in Terminator 2. As one of the SWAT team that raids that building.
Oh shit, so he was.
Yeah, and he was I forget which of the Almighty films it was, but it was Bruce Almighty or Evan Almighty. But he was a cop on the ground with like a bullhorn going, "Sir, step off the ark," or whatever.
Yeah, he is that sort of. That archetypal police officer, like American police officer.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like, you know, a bit arrogant, a bit loud, you know.
Mm. But I've always been kind of blown away by Dean Norris's performance in Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah,
because that's considering that's what he's sort of known for, is that cop character, and then to go on and do such incredible stuff like that fist fight that he had with Walt.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
Like kind of hugging him, kind of punching him. It was really, really brilliant stuff.
And it's like at the start, even Vince Gilligan was like when I first sort of. Decided the character of Hank, I didn't really think much of him. He was just sort of a British sort of Jack the Lad type person, and then he became a very complex man who has some very good emotional stuff.
Yeah.
It's like you were saying with that fist fight with Wall, it's like one punch he gives and then he's just like, it's just pain. And it's just like, I don't even know who I'm talking to, and he's just saying it so quiet and with tears in his eyes and stuff like that. It's just like, really powerful performance from the guy who was just like slinging racial insults at Gomez. It's just so different from the pilot, you know. But yeah, oh, the writing is just fantastic. The cinematography as well.
Oh God, yeah.
Fucking hell, Jesus! Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul have always been very creative with their shots. So there's some epic shots.
Yeah.
In there,
I absolutely love all that stuff of New Mexico. All like when they were cooking meth in the desert.
Yeah.
And it's like this gorgeous New Mexican desert, and it's like absolutely stunning. And even close up shots of different chemical processes, and like when they're in the super lab and it's Walter and Gale making meth, and it's like really beautiful shots of them pouring it into sheets, smashing it up, bagging it up, weighing, and it's all really beautiful stuff.
My favourite sequence is when it's like the sort of advert for how Los Pollos Hermanos was came about. It's like, my brother and I created the best chicken, and it's like one taste and you'll know. And then it cuts to like meth just being it's like meow, meow, meow. And Gus is standing there as like trucks just drive past him, and he's just it's cinematography like that, it's just great.
Oh yeah it's absolutely stunning. I tell you what did sort of break my heart a bit.
Go on.
Was the scene on the balcony right at the end of the episode where they were sharing the cigarette and they were throwing beer bottles off, and like there was no dialogue in the scene.
Yeah.
But like so it paralleled that scene you were talking about before about they were sharing a cigarette or something, but you knew what the conversation was between them. It's like watching that scene, it's like they are so perfect for each other.
Oh yeah.
And it's like Jimmy McGill that practiced elder law is perfect for the person that Kim wants to be.
Yeah.
But you sort of just know that he's not being corrupted, he's being sort of led off this sort of righteous path, and he's just just drifting away from Kim, and it's just sort of heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah, I wish there was more relationships on television like Jimmy and Kim. They don't they don't even have to say anything. And you know exactly what they're saying.
Yeah.
Just so well written and so well developed. And we know almost nothing about Kim. And yet she's such an amazing character.
So as time goes on, I am enjoying her character more and more, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I love Kim. She's my favourite. Without a doubt. God. Right, let's talk about the game of chess now.
Between
Lalo and Gus. So Lalo's plan, if I remember it correctly, Lalo wants to disrupt Gus's money.
Right.
So that he is no longer protected by the cartel, and Lalo can essentially just do what he wants and get rid of him.
Yeah.
So this dead drop thing with Crazy 8 has, I imagine that's got something to do with it.
Yes, I would imagine so. Because we don't know whether those are Gus's dead drops or Lalo's dead drops.
Yeah.
Because if they're Gus's dead drops, then it kind of all slots into place quite nicely. Lalo has figured this out through one way or another. And thereafter, he's planning to disrupt Gus's money by taking the money before it gets to Gus.
Yeah.
Of taking all of his dealers put money in this one bin on 7th and 12th, or whatever, however American cities work, on this one like trash can, and he's going to take the money out, or the DEA are going to go and seize it and take it out before Gus can get it.
Yeah.
That would make sense. But if those are Lalo's bins, I really don't know.
I think they are Gus's, because remember that scene where it's Nacho's telling him what Lalo is doing? And it's like Gus's, like the dead drops remain.
Yes.
So it's like Gus is leaving them intentionally. To sort of, I don't know, to sort of maybe say, well, Lalo doesn't know that that I know that he knows, almost.
Yeah. It's to lull Lalo into a false sense of security.
Yeah.
And then he's going to send Mike in or something.
Did you see, was Jimmy that close to death? Or was that, or did I read that wrong? It's like Victor took out his phone and was like, and Gus is like, what are you doing? And Victor was like, I'm shutting it down. And then Gus is like, put it away. It's like, who else knows the lawyer? And then Victor takes out his phone. Was that like, oh yeah, okay, I'll kill him then.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I presumed that was, he was going to mobilise some of Gus's people to take out the dead drops.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then I was like, well, maybe that would have been even more interesting if it was just like, yeah, we'll take out the lawyer immediately. It's like Jimmy was like that close to death. But now that I'm thinking about it, it probably makes more sense that it was the dead drops.
Mm-hmm.
So Gus, oh God. How is Gus going to get rid of Lalo? If you were Gus, what would you do?
I think the first thing you have to do is, we're presuming that Gus is concerned about like the consignere guy who came down to arbitrate the argument between them.
Yeah.
If we're presuming there's some kind of higher up boss man, was it Don Eladio or something?
Yeah, that's right. The one who sits by the pool. That's Eladio.
Yeah. So if we're presuming that Gus still answers to Don Eladio in Breaking Bad,
yeah,
then we first need to discredit Lalo to Don Eladio. We need to make Lalo appear crazy or unreliable or a loose end sort of thing, and then go to him and say, look, Lalo's been being dead weird recently, and I let me know if I'm crossing a line here, but I think I can send some of my guys around and take him out if you want, but like, he's really been super weird recently. I think he might blow our whole operation.
Yeah.
And while doing that, you need to sort of also be a better meth dealer than Lalo is.
Yeah, that's true. And then at the same time, it's like Lalo's trying to take out your side of it with these dead drop. So Gus is going to let the money go then? Why?
Well, I suppose it might just be a drop in the ocean compared to how much money he has. Maybe Lalo only knew about certain dead drops, three dead drops of 50 or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It might only be a drop in the ocean.
Well, maybe. Well, how would he know that though?
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Did he just sort of survey it and just sort of tail his guys and things like that? I watched it and I need to watch it again. I should have really watched it twice beforehand, but it's. So Gus is intentionally going to let the money go to sort of throw Lalo off.
Yeah.
I wonder what Gus...
That's the only
get.
Thing I
Gus
can think,
must,
yeah.
Gus must have something up his sleeve. He's like, there's... I don't know. But it's very exciting. I'm very invested to see what happens now. And it's one scene. We only get one scene. And yet it was like... all he had to say was, the dead drops remain. And it's, oh my God. Chills, fucking chills.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is so high stakes in this show.
Oh God.
I think I might have run out of notes, to be honest.
I think I might have done as well. That's going to be my favourite part of this whisper, talking about the chess match between Lalo and Gus.
As it keeps moving forward, I'll be disappointed. I mean, it won't happen. Let's be honest. I'm not going to be disappointed by this show. I'm so used to being let down by Doctor Who, thinking, oh, they had a really good thing going, and then they let us down with this random, shitty ending. But let's be honest, Vince Gilligan cares too much about this to let it have a shit ending.
Yeah.
He's had this planned out in his head for a decade.
I trust Vince very much.
And what's the other guy? Peter Gould,
he's very good. Vince has really had very little involvement in the show, in this show specifically. It's like, it's really all down to Peter Gould and his writers, so I trust them very much.
Yeah.
I know that they won't let us down, you know, because they care about their fans, Chibnall.
If you're wondering what we're talking about, please listen to our Doctor Who whispering into the voids, because we complain a lot about Doctor Who on those ones.
Yes, we certainly do.
Have we got some closing statements, Dan?
Yes, we do. God, where is it? As much as I love this episode, I feel it mainly is doubling down on the character's current emotions. The breakdown of relationship has to hit hard very soon for things to feel sort of higher stakes. And always, as always, the chess match between Lalo and Gus is just breathtaking.
Oh, yeah. Another installment of quality drama. I'm excited to see what happens to Nacho. Feels almost like a soap at this point. I'm invested in all of the characters' escapades, and I would tune in for pretty much anything.
Yeah. Well.
What a show, eh?
What a show. What a big show.
Oh, aye. Is it time for a bit of shilling? Will that cheer us up?
It is a bit. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because we've literally just done Doctor Who.
Mm.
And you'll hear about that.
Yeah.
You'll hear about that when it comes out.
Because we're releasing the Doctor Who one and this one at the same time. So
right.
go back to our page and listen to the other one after you finish this.
That's so good, because it's like the next today's like, what is Sunday today when
we're
recording, and Better Call Saul comes out on Tuesday. It's like, oh, it's so near already. I hadn't even realised that. Oh god, brilliant. I'm on Instagram at Ohiram. I'm on Facebook at Daniel Kerr. I'm on Twitter at Kerzo2000. What are you on, Lewis?
I am on Instagram at Lewis_Brindley. I am on Twitter at LewisBrindley4. I have a Facebook page, Lewis Brindley. Have a look, see if you can find it.
We're hosted by Podomatic. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We have a YouTube channel. We're on Deezer. We have a PayPal donate button. We're on Patreon. Anything you can spare, any coffers, any little shillings, anything, just drop it in the pot. And yeah,
please. It would all make a world of difference. We absolutely love doing this, and so to be able to carry on doing it would mean the absolute world.
Definitely. So yeah, we'll see you. We'll hear you. Listen next time.
One day you'll get that one right. I've got faith.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening.